Thank you. Ms. Sprinkle?
Okay, so based on that, Mike, the piece of the map I'm looking at shows us on Cowles, this proposed ROW. So I just wonder, why is that impacting Airport Way?
I'm not exactly sure, to be honest. Like, this whole thing is, I feel, a little bit blown out of proportion.
But, okay.
This is really not, is not something that that affects us in any way, shape, or form. They just need this just to you know, dot the I's and cross the T's.
Okay, so last question.
They're not doing anything nefarious with the property or
anything. No, I'm not worried about that. It, in the title, it says partially releasing. Why partially? What part is that partially?
Tom, you want to take this one?
Yeah, so the code requires that the council act on any kind of property transfer. And in this particular case, the title, when we deeded the property over to the borough, has three restrictive covenants on it. The first is that they can only use it for a library or park. The second is that they can't build any kind of sporting facilities on it. And the third is that it changes how much of the property they can use for the library, the portion of the property they can use for the library. This is a section that I think our engineering department actually has been working with DOT to widen the road so that buses can turn onto Airport a little easier. And if we don't do this, if the council didn't do this, the borough would run the risk of violating one of the restrictive covenants, and that's why we need to do it through an ordinance. It's 187 square feet. I agree with the chief of staff that it seems overblown, but it is required by the code to have council approve any kind of land transfer or any kind of transfer of property rights.
Mr. Barney?
So have they put a date on this yet? I mean, we've been talking to this 10 years at least. No.
Okay. My understanding is that whole project keeps getting delayed due to the contamination down here at this intersection.
Anyone else have anything to add? Mr. Ringstad? No? Okay. All right, so we'll move on. Ordinance number 6334, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 2. 119A, order of business adding a set time during the second council meeting of each month for receiving a report from the leadership in our community, including Dinakanaka, Fairbanks Native Association, Tainanau Chiefs Conference, Doyon, and, or other designated groups. This is advanced to January 12th, and I believe Mr. Leeworth is the sponsor. Or Ms. Sprinkle and Mr. Leeworth. Who would like to talk on it, Mr. Cleaver?
Oh, sorry, it's too quiet.
Oh.
well, Sue brought this actually up in some of her comments at the first reading of the land acknowledgement deal, and I thought it was a good idea. When I was kind of making the rounds talking to some of the Native leadership, I said, you know, would you be receptive to a time when we can actually learn more about the organizations. If you call any of the four major organizations out there, you get a long recorded message that says, if you want to talk to or do this or do this, and push one, push two, push three. And they provide a lot of services that some I'm aware of and some I simply am not. And I think it would be very educational to know what they can or cannot do. I also was under the impression that some of them worked under other ones as far as their corporate structures went. I really thought that Doyon was a part of one of those organizations. It's not. All four are totally autonomous unto themselves. And Doyon especially to me would be fascinating because they're an economic driver of Fairbanks in a large way, and it's interesting to know what they're doing or not doing and what the various organizations are. You know, over the years that I've been here, there seems to be a bit of a rub between some of the organizations in the city, and usually that's focused on the police department. And I think we have done a lot of things over the years to correct some of that and to have a much better communication. And I could give, you know, many stories that I've heard of over the years, but I think that communication is very important. guests to hear the perspective of what's going on, and also to hear our perspective of how we look at things too. So communication's a good thing.
A sprinkle?
Jerry, thank you for spearheading the writing of this. I, as Jerry mentioned, I thought this would be a smart way for us to build on the land acknowledgement, which I think is something we'll see how that plays through, and I think that that was a start to what I hope here will be is a conversation. It has to be two-way. I think it really would behoove the city to be able to have a dialogue between all these entities versus just hear about it in the newspaper or maybe at the coffee shop. I just want to see that we are engaged, and I hope that they'll come to visit with us, and hopefully they'll ask us to visit with them. You know, whether it's a board meeting or a meeting of any sort, I thought that this is my first attempt to start a dialogue. So, thank you.
Ms. Therrien?
Yes, I think I wanted to co-sponsor this, and I think the ordinance needs to be amended on the order of business to include the land acknowledgement. Maybe Mr. Sanders could get that amended.
We'll work with the clerk on that.
As it doesn't list the land acknowledgement. Thank you.
Mr. Irving said.
I like the idea of getting some better communication. Couple of things bother me, though. We're putting out one group with, as Jerry says, various parts, but one group to put in and say, okay, they're on our agenda. And I don't see that we as a local government are supposed to be picking and choosing among people. Everybody should be treated the same, and everybody should have the opportunity. Technically, the way it's written says Fairbanks Native organizations, like that's a proper name, proper noun. It's not. This is a collective group, so these probably shouldn't be capitalized as saying it's a group, right? Fairbanks Native. So if we look at the beginning of it, we kind of spell them out who they are. But this would read like that's a proper noun. It's not a proper noun. So grammatically, I think we're wrong. It should just say Fairbanks Native Association, not capital letters. Yeah.
You're correct on that.
Yeah. Then I guess, to me, if we really want to have conversation, we're going to have this. So somebody's going to have to work with them. Okay, whose turn is it to come talk today? Not everybody today and nobody for the next 6 months. And figure out which groups. Jerry's right. These are very different organizations. To make it useful, we need to have an organized presentation, organized dialogue, and have it. This meeting we're going to do this group. Next meeting we're going to do another group, and bring in kind of a plan over the year to have these dialogues and do that. So hopefully we can get that done.
I could answer. What I'm hoping for is, no, I don't expect the city clerk to call up and say, come. If this passes, I think the ball should be on their court and say there is a time slot here between the organizations themselves if they may not have anything. Or they might have something, but they work amongst themselves as to who's going to be there and present. I think that should be up to them and not up to us.
We should make that clear to them. That's our expectation.
Ms. Sprinkle?
And this is maybe to the clerk. If it's like we do with the borough, we set that up in advance. So is that different? Would this be treated differently, do you think, or should we treat it the same way?
If the council asked me to coordinate that on a schedule basis, I could do that, like I do for you guys for the borough meetings. And just a side note that the borough assembly, starting this year, they've they've said that they'll be here the first meeting of every month as long as it doesn't conflict with any of their meetings. So second meeting of each month, that would kind of fit with that, you know, Borough Assembly report one meeting and Native organizations the next.
Okay, so that's in the time slot that we've got here, it would be interchangeable? Is that what you're saying?
Although the Borough Assembly isn't written into the ordinance.
Yeah, where would they be giving their reports?
Well, that's a question I guess we need to discuss, and whether we should also be writing that into the ordinance under the order of business. Because as it stands right now, the Borough Assembly does not have a designated spot on the agenda. It would fall under special reports under Mayor's Comments and Report.
So, Ms. Sprinkle, is there a reason why we wouldn't just want to do something like this under that and, you know, open it up in that way?
I don't know what you mean by do something like that. What do you mean?
Like instead of having a something designated that changes the order of business on the agenda, coordinating, you know, if we wanted to have more dialogue with a particular group, then allowing that to happen during the reports, which is actually already allowed in our agenda.
I don't have a real preference. I just want to make sure that whatever we do doesn't make it a lot of work for the clerk, but also that if it's going to be something we do, that people know to show up. Mm. And I don't know how that would be a respectful way to ask them to be here. You know, it has to be publicly noticed, I'm sure. So this is my first attempt at doing this. So if you guys have ideas, I think it'd be great to hear about them, but not to make it anything but that let's have dialogue. And if we're doing the same with the borough, I think, I guess my question is it equal footing? Are we considering them the same way? And I don't know. I'm just throwing that out. Mr. Cleaver?
In the past, under Mayor Matherly, the borough sent over Brittany Smart to be here. And under the mayor's comments, they brought her up. And she was given unlimited time to speak at that point. So you really don't need to codify that if we're going to have a borough rep doing something like that. It would actually come under your comments. It would be easy to do.
Mr. Marnie?
So I don't see any kind of time allotment here. Have you guys, is it just open-ended? Or are we going to set a time limit?
That's a conversation to have, for sure. You know, because I know that, again, if I may, mm-hmm. You know, when we go to the borough, we have a supposed time allotment, but we are also on the agenda. So, I'm just bringing that up to, is there any parity here? Do we want to put a time limit on that? I'm open to discussion. I have no real dog in that fight.
Mr. Cleaver?
I think that's up to you, the mayor, really. You know, if you're having a good conversation, if we're hearing interesting things, like nuclear power plants at Eielson that Doyon's working on or things of this nature, then you might want to take some time. I also envision that there will be meetings where there is no representation, possibly. But if we have a heavy agenda, then that's really up to the moderator to say, yeah, we need to wrap this up, or something like that. So when the Borough Assembly put time limits on the council, we did not appreciate that. And we wrote resolutions in regard to that, and it was inappropriate because prior to that, it's never been done. You know, you get a report from the two cities and the school district, and you move on. But, I just think it's a little more hospitable.
Ms. Therrien?
Yes, I would think that we should just have the clerk organize who's going to come talk to us from the various Fairbanks Native organizations. And I think we should add the Borough Assembly report to our ordinance as well.
Yes, Mr. Reedstad?
I'm not sure we want to put this on the clerk. I think Jerry's probably right. We started dialogue. We're having some discussion. And whichever ones of them, if they have something, then let them coordinate and come forward and say, okay, we want to be on the meeting next, the next meeting. I'm not sure I want to put this all in the clerk's office to try and force her, have to try and force somebody to come and show up. Doesn't feel right to me.
Sprinkle. For any reason, does it need to be publicly noticed? I guess is a question I have. Is that could it be under mayor's comments and that's the end of it? Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm seeing a lot of head nod. Okay.
Yes, that's kind of my feeling. Is we have a space where that is open on the agenda for organizations to come and speak. It sits a little weird with me. I feel like we're saying, you have to come to our house and tell us what you're doing. And I don't think that's the intention at all, but that's how that's sitting with me a little bit. And I think if we want to dialogue with any organization, whether it's Alaska Native organizations or Chamber of Commerce, then we have that dialogue through the work that we do in the community, through the mayor's office, through your positions as council leaders. I think that's where we build relationships. And we have on our agenda public comment, and we have work sessions where we can request them to anybody to come and give us a presentation. I think those are more appropriate avenues to have that information shared.
It seems a very disappointing end to the conversation, I guess, to me.
I mean, that's just my opinion.
I would like to see a little more intention versus just show up if you want. But this is just a conversation.
Sure, and that's something that, you know, I'd be willing to work with, you know, through the mayor's office and set that as something that we do, so it doesn't just live with my term, but it lives on. I mean, who's next, right? Is the sports association's going to want to be on our agenda and update us every? I mean, like, it is a slippery slope when we open it up.
Although these entities are considered somewhat autonomous. I mean, they have legitimate, almost legislative importance in the city. So I just don't think they're not the Chamber of Commerce. So, okay. Right. So, but anyway, this is me bringing this here. I hear you guys. I just wanted to see if this stuck to anything that felt right or forward motion.
I also worry about listing organizations in an agenda. This, you know, like, this certainly isn't every Alaska Native organization that operates in the city or even in the borough. So that might not meet our intent that way. Okay. Mr. Marnie?
Well, I think, to begin this, I think it's a good way to start, and we can always tweak it as it goes, but at least we've got that olive branch out now.
Okay. Well, I'll work on this. How's that?
And was there any discussion with any of these organizations before? Like, have they seen the ordinance?
No, but
I did.
And how were those discussions?
They're excited about it.
Okay. So,
yeah.
I heard from Shirley. She liked this a lot, but you know, again, I'm not trying to force this on anybody. If it feels weird and those entities feel like we're insulting them, I hope that's not true. I'm not looking to do that.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Does the sponsor have any more questions for feedback?
No, I'll just do a little behind the scenes corrective measures. Thank you. Thank you, Jerry, by the way.
All right, let's move on to resolution number 5195, a resolution allocating discretionary funds from the room rental tax in the amount of $400,000. This has not been introduced, and I believe Mr. Marnie is a sponsor.
Well, this is the annual kind of the end of the year process where we take the allotted amount, which is $400,000, and we divide it. Oh, well, 26 here with, I think we had five applications that didn't qualify. So I commend my committee for their hard work. It's, the pie is limited, so it's, you know, we carve it up the best way we can. So I'm very proud of my committee.
Questions comments, discussion? Ms. Sprinkle?
Lonnie, did you find anything of a hiccup this year? Or did you feel like, I know you've done pre-application.
Q&A.
Yeah, and I think that you were trying to eliminate any problems that people said, oh gosh, we didn't get this done. Any surprises?
Yeah. Some long-term agencies that applied that, although this year is probably the best year we've had, I think we implemented that Q&A session 3 years ago, and it cut out a lot. We had a big show up here, but we did have some that I think usually it's the ones that turn it in on the 31st, the last day, and so they rush through things and just miss things. And that one case there was Yukon Quest. And the other thing is, you know, our pie is so limited that that it doesn't take much to get $400,000 distributed. And we tried to indicate people, you know, please share. Don't shoot for the moon, but that doesn't get deciphered well, I guess. So that's the only disappointment. I wish if I could go back in time, I know Explorer Fairbanks didn't want to hear this, but I think that $400,000 should have been bumped up to $500,000, but I'm not going after that horse again.
Mr. Cleaworth, then Ms. Therrien.
Yeah, Lonnie, thank you for your work on this. You guys always do a good job, and I know it's tough, especially when you have people that didn't respond accurately, and to say no is hard. I'm just curious, the last two items, 25 and 26, can you tell me something about them?
Well, 25 is Olivia Rodriguez's
thing,
so she's involved in downtown, a lot of the stuff at the plaza. And the last one was a new one this year, and it's Museums of Alaska. And what they're doing is promoting the 250th birthday for the United States. So they've kind of reached out to former baseball players that played here as a panner or anywhere else in the state. So they asked for a big hunk of money, too, but there was just too many questions, and that's why they got what they got.
Mayor? Ms. Therrien?
Oh, sorry.
Yes, Jerry had asked my questions, and I just want to thank Lonnie for all the work that he and the committee does on this. Thank you.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Lonnie, do you put emphasis on these entities that are downtown or in the city core? Or in the city, I guess.
No, not really. I mean, we expanded. I had some a couple of agencies that were out in the Salcha or Moose Creek that applied. Basically, what we're looking for is tourism and economic development are probably the two key things that we look for. So.
So someone from Nanana could apply for this?
You're stretching the borders, but if they had a good something that benefited the city of Fairbanks in some fashion, yeah. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Marnie, does the committee weigh whether or not the organization is a nonprofit or a for-profit?
Mayor, not really. Not really. We look at, you know, that's during the presentation process. And, of course, each of us get a copy of the application. And so that is studied well, and questions are asked during the presentation that kind of points you personally which way or other. And then, of course, the problem is taking that amount of money and try to get them the best bang for the buck. I mean, you know, try to get as much as we can. Of course, you've got bigger agencies like Arts Association, ICE, you know, the ICE Champion, you know, Bernie Carl's organization. So, not really. Yeah.
Do they have to give a report, or how do we know what the funding is spent on?
Oh, yeah, that's through the application process.
Mm-hmm. So at the end of the year, or how do we get that information back?
Well, it's part of the process that it goes through our finance department, first of all. Marguerite has handled that for I don't know how many years. But Sarah First is actually trying to take that role over. So they go through the applications, and if the paperwork's not filled up correctly, if we have errors in the math side of it, they get eliminated and send a letter.
Any other questions or discussion? All right, moving on to number five, a resolution designated Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation objectives. This has not been introduced, and Ms. Sprinkle is the sponsor.
May I?
Ms. Sprinkle.
Okay. Well, you've seen us try to get our arms around this a couple years now, in as far as turning money over to the entity that we expect some economic development from. We've also seen the borough give very prescriptive contracts. They are very tight. And ours is just take the money, and the borough's is here's what we need, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. And I wanted a Goldilocks. So I, with help of Margarita and others, have gone through this and thought, well, let's give it a little shopping list. And Crystal, I hope to hear from you on this as well, because I don't think we're asking big pieces of legislation from these folks, but I know that as an arter, they need to show us what they can do, flex a muscle. And the SEDS is part of, it's mandatory, so we've included that. The B under section 1 is to ask them to start really bringing to fruition the housing information we need, because we need it, but also to work in tandem with other entities in town. So I think that that will help us then also to target and task the housing entities in the city, in the borough, to really get some boots on the ground for this, because it's falling way behind, and they've got this thing underway anyway. So let's finish that up. And then C is just, again, one of the new things, I think, to say, as an arter, you're supposed to get money, federal, state, wherever that comes from, and bring it to us. So this is a real ask of them to say, okay, here's identified grants. Here's how that would work within a grant timeline, so that we're not just given a list of what we want. Maybe we'll do agriculture, or maybe we'll I want actual information about the grant, when it happens, what we need to do for it. So this just gets them on notice to say, we're going to look for some money coming in. So that's what I started here, and I appreciate your thoughts on this.
Ms. Tidwell.
I think this is great, Sue. I think you did a great job on this. I think that starts to give some parameters of what we're looking for, and I think that it's wonderful. I would be happy to co-sponsor this. And I'm also not on that board anymore. The mayor now is going to sit in that seat. So I haven't been to the last couple meetings, just so everyone knows. I just want to remind you. But I do think it's great. This is something I brought up a couple of times, and then we just never had time to work on it. So I really appreciate you working on this. I think it's excellent.
Mr. Ringstead.
Yeah, I think we're probably past due on this, Sue. I think your focus is good. We need to be more specific about what we want. And I think pushing the issue of going out and getting grant money, I mean, that's what they should be operating on. I think, and I don't know how to put this in there, but to me, this is our primary organized effort to go out around the community and say, let's bring more economic development I would like to see them focus on some private sector economic development, bring some outside business into town, bring some jobs into town, something other than government. You know, as far as I can tell, we don't really have anybody in the community that goes out and looks at people and organizations and say, gee, why don't we go ask them to, you know, come do business in our town, and explain to people, this is what we've got to offer. This would be the organization to have something and say, here's what Fairbanks has to offer. I'm yet to see anything in the community do that. And I think that whether that's organizations from elsewhere in the state, whether it's from all over the country, whether it's international, or, you know, I think the door's wide open. But an organization is basically funded by two of our local governments. They should be the leader to go out and do these kind of things. And I don't know how to put that in here, but I'd like folks to think about that part a little bit too, and if we could include something in that vein, I'd appreciate that. But I think you're great for getting this on the table and getting something going.
Ms. Therrien?
Yes, I was just wondering whether or not we're going to coordinate with the borough to have them also introduce an ordinance to a similar degree. And I think that FEDCO had asked for an increase of money, and I don't know if we finished the audit to see whether or not more money could be provided to them. Just a question.
Ms. Sprinkle.
I'm not anxious to give them money right now. I'd like to see them do our small list of things to get done, because that to them is, they got to pick a priority as well. So what they don't do is up to them. And I don't know, as a board member, maybe you can talk to that. I don't know, ex-board member. I don't know how they pick their priorities, I guess.
Over like the last year, I know they've gone through like a pretty intense strategic plan that the board spent some time working on, and I think that's really one of the things that they refer back to when they're deciding what to do. But I have had some conversation about that's really what we need is like bullet points to, you know, for them to, oh, this is the next thing on the list. Let's do this. Okay, we've done that. Let's move on to the next. So I know that strategic plan is something they really look back on, but I think that this will be helpful. I think that's something that we haven't done since I've been there is really have a lot of tasks. Like, we want you to work on this, and we want you to work on that. And I've always been met with openness. You know, I think that when we have had something like the previous mayor was really interested in increasing freight out at the airport, and, you know, they were really open and jumped right on that. So I think any kind of direction is met with a willingness to get that done.
Mr. Marnie?
Well, along with housing, you know, bringing new businesses, bringing employees, hiring, you know, that all couples together. And I've always thought, as far as more money, to me, this ought to be a commission base. So where you perform, you equate that to more money. Kind of return on the dollar there. So that's what I'd like to see.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Margarita, because I know that as our ordinance or code reads that we have to give them X dollars at this point. So would that commission kind of thing have to come as a code change?
As far as the amount, if you increase the amount, you can do without a code change. Is that the question?
Well, I don't know. A commission is different from just saying we're going to give you another $50,000, right?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
I mean, the code states how much they get, so I would see that as the bottom line, but it really depends on how you budget it. You can even change that amount in a budgeting process.
Okay. So we can talk about this.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could.
Okay.
I'll just add to Ms. Therrien's question about the borough contract. Their contract is a lot different than the city contract because they're very particular about what FEDC can spend their dollars working on with the different tax jurisdictions. So the borough has something that's way more complicated than this, and I would not advise that we go that direction. So they do have something that's similar to this, but it's also quite different.
Yeah, so, hence the Goldilocks. That was, their contract is crazy.
Yeah. Any further discussion? All right. Moving on to item 6, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 2-653, City Council approval of excess expenditures. This is not introduced, and I believe it's Mr. Cleworth is the sponsor. Mr. Cleworth.
Thank you, Mayor. As simple as this is, it's been a long time in the making. We've been working with Tom and Marguerite on this, and the concept here is simply to just clarify differences between ordinances and resolutions. I mean, most everybody knows that resolutions are just like the preceding one. It's a statement of opinion and direction. But they don't have normally any fiscal notes that go with them. They don't spend money or add money. In the past, we've had some kind of blurring of those lines. So this hopefully clarifies that Part A just simply says now that the chief financial officer shall not permit without city council approval by ordinance, unless expressly provided for in the charter or code otherwise, any expenditure or contract or incurring of any liability. In other words, takes two readings in. If we're going to spend money, add money, spend money, it has to go through the public process. We don't do that by resolution. The second part of this, I think basically Tom wrote the clearing up some language that we have in our code. That's basically it.
Mr. Ringstead.
I think it, from a technical point, excuse me, that should have been probably done a while ago. I've been talking with Tom a little bit on this issue, kind of from a different approach, and Sue and I have talked about it some, about what our guidelines are for how much authority we give the administration to spend without council approval. And as we, you know, we're looking at prioritizing in our budget, you go through and say, well, we don't have the money for this, that, or the other. Throughout the year, the administration goes through and they can spend up to a certain amount of money without our approval. And we were looking at, and I talked to Tom through the last few weeks over the holidays about taking that chart we have. I guess it's in our code. I don't remember where the chart is, but looking at some of those numbers and saying, okay, let's, if it's over, lowering the amount so the money comes back to the council, and collectively there at the end, we can say, okay, this is where we want to put the money. That should be the council's authority to do that. So I would like to try to see if maybe that's something we should put into this and have one of these approaches. One, it's a real similar item, I think. Isn't it, Tommy? Similar subject?
Definitely similar subject, different sections of the code.
Yeah.
So what you're referring to is in the procurement section. And what Councilmember Cleworth is working on here is kind of in a general administrative section that's talking about generally ordinances and resolutions. Certainly the topics are very close.
That's why I thought that they're pretty close, and maybe we ought to have it one all in one discussion rather than piecemeal.
Ms. Crinkle?
What I hear, I think Tom saying is that it's an apple and an orange, but still in the same basket.
Okay.
Am I hearing that?
Still, they're all still fruit. With words, doesn't she?
Yeah. Both sold at the local grocery store. I suppose I would say.
A walk woke you up.
We're not done, no.
She walked.
Yeah, Mr. Sanders.
Sorry, I don't normally try to, put any input into this stuff because this is definitely your lane. But just one quick recommendation is if I were you, I would consider carving out something specifically for grants. A lot of times with a grant, there will be some sort of liability with that. But we often do not have an entire month to spend on an ordinance. A lot of times grants will come out and you know, we're lucky if we get that resolution done. That's just the one caveat that I would suggest that we put in here.
The chief of staff is correct. There are certain situations where the code actually requires that a resolution carry a fiscal note. An example would be where we purchased land for cash. We did that with a property pretty recently. There are examples where, like grants, where things come up and we don't really have a huge timeline, huge window of opportunity. I checked in with the CFO on that aspect of it. Certainly, it would slow things down, and it's something that maybe the council should consider amending the ordinance to accommodate that. It would just be, it's up to the council on what they want to do with that.
There's another part of code that states that if we have anything within a grant that requires a match or a budget change, that we have to do an ordinance. So it's already addressed in the code regarding grants that require matches. Now, the liability aspect of it, which I think is what Mr. Sanders is referring to, is every grant has some sort of requirement of the city. We always say that no grant is free. So there are some grants that may involve more as we go through the process of applying that this may come into effect. But that may hold off that process. But we do address it in cases where there's a match, and if there's no match already identified in the budget, that we have to do an ordinance.
Mr. Chart has something to add.
Just the CFO is correct. There is another section of code. The departments that are applying for the grants, if they have the availability within their budget to provide the match or cover the liability, I mean, that's one scenario. The other scenario would be where they're applying and they don't feel like they have the authority to apply for the grant because in doing so, they're putting some liability on the line, they're putting some risk on the line. In a lot of those situations, there's a period between when you apply for the grant and when you accept the grant. And, you know, certainly we could, and I know that the chief of staff and others have heroically kind of come in after the fact to say, hey, if we get this, you know, this might require this. Let's talk about this. So there's some flexibility here. It's not, you know, I think the chief of staff is correct. There is a risk with this, with grants, with the timeliness of it. But as the CFO has pointed out, I also think that there's other sections of the code that cover it in the budget, and there's some flexibility there.
Ms. Therrien, then Mr. Cleworth.
Mr. Chair, you don't think that we need to do a specific ordinance with regard to the grants, as you had previously suggested?
I think that if the council wants to carve out a specific section or carve out some language to deal with the issue that Mr. Sanders brought forward, we can certainly take that under advisement and try to work on an amendment to that effect. But as the CFO has also pointed out, generally speaking, there's other sections of the code that provide some flexibility there. So it really would be council's prerogative.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and get something drafted and let me look at it, okay?
Sure, can do that.
Mr. Cleworth?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Sometimes in the past, we have grants that pop up very fast, and we won't even see them in a work session. We'll see them at the meeting, and Mike's absolutely right on that, and so we have to act on it. But with those, if there's a match required, that has to be stated at the time, and that's got to come from the CFO. You're not agreeing to anything at that point. You're applying for it. If you get the grant and there is a cost to the city and that cost is not budgeted, then to me that should be an ordinance. It should go through the public process where people have, you know, two bites at the apple to test it, but just like anything else that we do with our budget. So I think we could, that was when we were working on this, that was the one topic we kept discussing. And so we don't want to inhibit that from happening. If we have a window of opportunity that opens up immediately that we need to act on, we need to be able to do that.
Ms. Bell, did you have something to add? I was stating it's under multi-year contracts in the code.
So that provision is already in the code, so we wouldn't
need it. Yes, it's addressed in the code.
Ordinance. Okay. Any further discussion? All right. Item 7, an ordinance amending Fairbanks General Code Section 74-117, room rental tax purpose and limitation by removing term limits for discretionary fund committee members. This is not introduced, and I believe Mr. Marnie is the sponsor.
Well, since I've been on council, and this is my second term, this is the only committee that there is term limits on, and I nobody can answer why. So I just took it on myself with conversation with the committee that I would like to see this changed. I don't know. I don't have the history like Mr. Cleworth. I don't know. Each and every one of the members on that committee are upstanding citizens. I just think it, I just think that it should be eliminated that there are term limits on this committee.
Ms. Brickle?
Lonnie, so at this point, people leave after their second, third year, three-year term or one-year term?
I've only had one that termed out. Like Sam Kirsten, Tracy Gatewood, they're on their end of their second term. So I'm trying to eliminate turnover.
Because they understand the process and it's...
Yeah, I just... The way they attack the applications and this whole process is just amazing. It's a good team. And I know Margarita will agree with me there.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or discussion? Okay, item 8, an ordinance authorizing Public Works to provide services outside the city benefiting Tanana Valley State Fair Association in exchange for a snow storage site. This is not introduced, and I'm going to hand this over to Mr. Sanders.
All right. Thank you. So this is something that, and we have Mr. Cotter here, who can probably talk to it better than I can, but this is something that we've been doing for a while. We've been working with the Tanana Valley State Fair Association to use some of their area for snow storage. It speeds up our snow removal process quite a bit by having that as an option for snow storage. And in the past, we've done some minor repairs to their roads and sidewalk, roads and parking lot and stuff. So this is something that we're looking to continue into the future.
Thanks. This seems like it makes a lot of sense to me. Couple of concerns, and maybe Tom can answer the first part of it. We say at the beginning we're talking about working in areas in or about Aurora and Johnson subdivisions. I don't want to restrict it. I mean, if you want to haul snow from someplace else and put it in a snow dump, I don't care. But it's in the whereas, so I don't think there's a lot of teeth to that. I think the bottom section gives them flexibility. Am I right there?
Yeah, that's correct. And this ordinance actually provides the authority to the mayor to enter into an agreement with the Fair Association, so there could be even more flexibility in that agreement.
The second one, where we say we go into this exchange or agreement, has there been discussion, or do you envision we're going to wind up paying them, and then it becomes a budgetary item?
My understanding is that, and Public Works and certainly the Chief of Staff and Chief Financial Officer could weigh in here. My understanding is that Public Works has set a budgetary limit. They will do work up to that limit. If there is more work than money, they'll carry the work forward to the future. But the money that limit is within their budget. I've also talked with the CFO, and we're going to add a fiscal note to this just to add some clarity to that.
So generally speaking, it's more of an exchange. We'll do some work for them. They just give us a place to do the work.
That's right. It's quid pro quo.
That one makes me feel better about it.
Mr. Cotter, do you have anything to add? Okay. Any further discussion or questions? All righty. Item 9, a resolution stating the preference of the council against remote work and telecommuting. This is introduced by members Ringstad and Marnie. Mr. Ringstad.
Yeah, this subject has kind of been gnawing at me for a while. And I mean, just getting bits and pieces keep coming out. And Margarita has put something on her desk that she said came up with this a few years ago. But as I understand it, our remote worker policy kind of started at the end of COVID. We were having lots of vacancies. We couldn't get people. And it's like, it was explained to me that we didn't feel like the collective city leadership said, we don't have a choice. We have to go find whatever we can get, wherever we can get it. I think we're kind of beyond that. We're getting toward the point now. We've worked through the last couple of years, and most of our departments are fairly well staffed and getting close to full staffed. But as we go through these, and it just continually comes up, we're providing travel for people that choose to not live here. We're providing housing for people that choose to not live here. We're paying workers' comp, and I don't know what, when Mr. Hale was in talking about our insurance in several different states. We're doing tax withholding in multiple states, because if they live someplace else and they work someplace else, we have to, according to those state laws, we have to pay these costs. To me, this is not, on several levels, we shouldn't be providing this service or this option for people to go live someplace else. We should be encouraging them to live in our community, not necessarily the city of Fairbanks, at least, but in the bigger community. We should be, you get back to some of this, our old issue of local hire, been around here a long time. This is kind of going exactly the wrong direction in my mind, is trying to do local hire. Providing incentives is the wrong way to go at it. Spending all these extra costs is not a priority in my budget vision here. So I think we got to start looking at those things and say, yeah, let's get a policy and say, you want to work for us? The job's in Fairbanks. You want to live someplace else? That's your business. Maybe I'm old-fashioned on this, but I think that anybody in a supervisory position, their employees should be able to see them on a regular basis and talk to them. Having your employees all work through you remotely, that works for some people, doesn't work for some people. But I think if you're going to have good management. You need management needs to be here. Our senior people need to be here, and we should to. As these things keep coming up, and I keep saying, "You kidding me? We're doing that?" I don't think any in the public wants to support us paying salaries for and providing it, making easy for people to live someplace else with their tax dollars. So that's what we're trying to do on this piece. Let's encourage our employees to stay here and work here and be part of our community.
Mr. Marnie?
Well, I'll join in because I have the same feelings as Mr. Ringstead, but you know, this is one of those policies that have lingered on. It's kind of been one of those no touch, no talk. And, you know, we all thank God that COVID is gone. And so I think we just need to come back to reality. And this is a start. I mean, this doesn't say, you know, you're going to get fired if you don't. But at least we should have the conversation. What do we want to do with the policy? Do we want to change the policy? Or do we just, you know, what are we going to live with for the future? So that's why I put my name on it.
So typically the policies for hiring within an administration lies within the administration. It doesn't typically go before the governing body. And just as a point of clarity, the city doesn't recruit for remote workers. We recruit for workers who are going to work at the city. And the two employees that are remote have been long-term employees. And we do not spend travel dollars to bring them here unless we're required to bring them here for a particular reason, which doesn't happen often. So just wanted to clarify some of those things. It's not a general practice of the city to recruit for remote workers. Mr. Ringstead?
On the travel money, we have accumulated a lot of airline miles that we use for travel. 44% of the airline's miles used in the past year, last year, I don't remember what the time frame, 44% of those miles went to one department for their employees to travel back and forth. We are paying for their travel.
And that would be the police department, and that is for the supervisors to travel to different conferences around the country.
And dispatch?
No. Do we have a report on that, Ms. Bell?
I can prepare a report on the mileage.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It looks like Mr. Merritt has something to add.
I just wanted to add to some of the statistics that you gave. Three of your four, you only have four remote workers at this time. Three of them have been with the city for over 15 years. You have 235 employees. This is 1.7%. You haven't hired a remote worker since quarter one of 2024. So essentially, at least my interpretation of the resolution, and please let me know if I'm misunderstanding, is that we would prefer to hire someone that lives in Fairbanks over someone that's remote, which is already the policy that HR follows, and those are our recommendations and hiring decisions already. The employees that were hired in quarter three of 2022, quarter two of 2023, and quarter one of 2024 were all previous employees who had been with the city long-term, and it saved the city money in training dollars, and we knew that they would be successful with the work rather than taking the risk of hiring someone. It didn't stop us from hiring anyone. It actually gave us the ability to hire more people at the time because the remote workers were able to assist with the training and stuff. And so I just wanted to give that update so that this body was aware.
Ms. Therrien?
Yes, this is addressed towards the dispatch, and I'd like to know if there is any cost associated in the budget for the four employees so we could have that before we vote on it.
Mr. Merritt?
Just a clarification, it's three remote workers in dispatch and one for the PD.
And to clarify even more, one's a part-time call taker that's called in as needed, and one's half-time in Fairbanks and half-time in South Central. Okay, Ms. Sprinkle?
So are we talking, sorry. Is it just four workers we're talking about? Is that the total number?
Four workers.
Thank you. Yep.
Ms. Bell, did you have something to say?
I just wanted to clarify that you have employees that live out of state and come in and work, and then we have employees that are remote workers. So you have two different levels, and the ones that are remote working for the city out of state are the only ones that we have to report on, and that's three. And one is from the police department and two in dispatch. And just to clarify that there's two different levels of employees that you may have out of state.
Mr. Cleaver.
Who is the one at the police department?
It's one of the evidence custodians.
How does that work?
She handles a lot of the digital requests.
Inputting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I say, how does it work when they're not there actually with the inmate? Oh, okay.
Mr. Marney, then Ms. Tibble.
Well, quick question. I don't know if this would be Jake's question, but I was here, I was on council when this all occurred, but I don't ever remember hearing something about grandfathered in.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what that means.
Well, normally if you have a policy and it's been there for a length of time, it's called grandfathered. And basically it's unread that this is our policy, although it doesn't state it. So is that what this remote program is? Is it grandfathered in?
No, I'm sorry. I believe at least what I'm understanding the question to be is that did we hire these people outside of following the current City of Fairbanks remote work policy? And no, all of them follow the policy as written. None of them, we have a remote work policy and all of them followed that. And so I'm not.
Thanks, Jake.
I guess I just want to say I really share the sentiment of this resolution, and I appreciate you putting it together. I think when we talk about allowing people to work remotely, and that saved us training dollars, and we were able to hire more people, we're still taking, now we have those people employed, and we've taken a position that we're no longer looking for somebody. I mean, that position is filled, and we have not filled it with somebody that contributes to our community. And if we have a remote policy, I guess I would maybe wonder if we need to visit that, which I don't know if that doesn't fall to the authority of the council. I have a huge problem with every time I hear of somebody that is working remotely. I do believe that started during COVID. It is not COVID anymore. We are a municipal government. We should be employing people that live and spend their money in this community. And, maybe we're not spending money on travel, but we are housing people. I have a huge problem with that. I don't think that we should be doing that. I wish this was a little more restrictive, but I do appreciate you working on it, John. And I would like to co-sponsor it.
Well, it begs the question, what does the current policy look like? I guess it would be nice to see that. Maybe
part.
Very good. And just to, not to pile on, but I'm going to say I just did a flight back to Anchorage and coming after all that, half the plane was filled with people going home from the mines. And I just thought, that's a shame. That's all that money leaving our state. So it irks me a little bit. So I'm not trying to lessen the effect that these people have brought to our city, but I think it would be nice to keep people who do the job in town and let them live here. So thank you. But I'd like to see the policy.
Yeah, I guess I want to say, you know, anybody who's working at the city is, by definition of their job, contributing to the city, whether they work here or whether they work somewhere else. And I the question that I want the council to think about is, what is it worth to have an employee who has been here for decades and an employee who is just here filling a seat? And is that different, or is there a benefit in a particular case? So I think that's something that we really need to weigh when we're thinking about policies like this and statements from the council like this to the administration. Mr. Merritt?
Just two things. One, a point of clarification, and one flavor for council. None of your remote workers have stopped my recruitment efforts or my hiring for any of the positions in – it seems that dispatch is the focus, so that's where I'll lay. I haven't stopped the recruiting process. We haven't filled all of the positions that I can fill. I have maxed the capacity of the department to provide training to the people that I am bringing in consistently for 2 years because of this, or we would have been limited in what we could bring in, and we wouldn't be at the percent higher that we are now. And then for the flavor, most of your remote workers have family that lives in this area. Most of them have roots in the community, and they feel a responsibility to the community, even though they may no longer live within the city limits. And so that's my 10 cents on that. Thank you.
Mr. Ringstead?
Yeah, when I first saw this, when I got on the council 3 years ago, I think we were running 9 out of 25 people in dispatch didn't live here. You've done a really good job of getting there. Same way with our police department. I think we've made great strides in the last couple of years. I mean, it's taken some work. We had to do some changing in their contract, make our dispatch people get our salary scale to where it was at least competitive. You know, I mean, we were so far behind the curve on that one. Nobody was going to work for us. I think we've made a lot of progress, and I appreciate your effort. But I did see a couple of years ago the policy on this, and was told that it was kind of as an outshoot of COVID, and I'm definitely over COVID. I'm just like I'm over the cold weather. But, going forward, if somebody chooses to not live here, I guess that's their choice. They were our employees, had a lot of experience. They chose to not live here anymore. That's their choice. Most places you go to work, you choose to live someplace else, and that's your choice, you know. I think we've made great strides. I think, as I understand it, we're down to 2 or 3 vacancies out of 25 positions in that department.
Mr. Ringstead, could you just talk into your microphone?
I think we're getting close to where we're stable in all of our departments and our personnel in terms of the vacancies. I mean, they were killing us 2 years ago. I hope by the end of this budget cycle, we'll be back into some sort of a better realm. I think we got to kind of forget where we were and put that behind us and move forward. And anything we can do to encourage our employees to live here, we should be doing.
The last time the policy was updated was in 2022, for your reference, and we will provide this for you all in the next packet, and we'll get it to you before then. Another thing that I wanted to say is an ordinance or a resolution like this makes me a little uncomfortable because I think we're talking about one individual in particular, and I don't think that we should be making policy or statements based on one person and singling out one individual in our in our workforce. I think that there can be potentially unintended consequences when we think in a very narrow way like that. Mr. Ringstaff?
I think Tom has written this in such a way it's not focused on an individual. You know, we've had at least two living in a city apartment for a good part of the year. I don't know how many others were going through there. But that's why this is specifically focused at a policy, a city policy, whether it's in the police department, the fire department, or Jeremiah's department. I don't particularly care. I think it's the public policy is we should be having our people live in our community.
Any further discussion? Okay, moving on to item 9, discussion on work session day and time. I believe Ms. Tidwell requested this on the agenda, so I'll hand the floor to you.
I just put this on there. I don't know when the work sessions went to 7 a.m., but I wanted to just throw out there, maybe we don't have to meet this early. I know it seems like every time we get here at 7 a.m., we're all like, oh, my gosh, why are we here so early? And I don't know, you know, maybe there is a very good reason for that that I'm not aware of, but I would be in favor of not showing up at 7. So I just wanted to put it out there and see if anyone agreed, disagreed, or all of the above.
Mr. Ringstead.
I think the only good reason I've got for being here at 7 o'clock is so I can get out of the house before my teenagers get up and go to school. I kind of agree. I you know, in terms of timing, I don't need to be here at 7.
Ms. Sprinkle?
All I know is when I go to bed before a work meeting like this, I know that I'm going to be up at 4 looking at the clock, 5 looking at the clock. And it really, I don't sleep well on the nights before my work meetings. It's just the way I am. I hate it.
I woke up this morning at 5 a.m. and thought it said 8 a.m. and about had a heart attack. Mr. Marnie.
What time would you like to see the meeting, Ms. Tidwell?
I normally start my day at 8. I mean, I would be happy with 8, but I'm also pretty flexible, so 8 wasn't fine. I'm good with anything after 8. Let's say that.
Would you want to keep it on Monday evenings?
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, Monday evening.
Monday evenings are when we have our council meetings. So maybe it makes sense that we also have a work session on the day. Floating out as discussion on the weeks that we don't have a council meeting.
Confused by now.
I'm offering another time for the work session.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I personally prefer morning to evening, but
Ms. Therrien?
I think that we need to keep them on morning. I know that there are certain people that have to work. It always worked well for me from 7 to 8 because I was working full time. I think we need to give that consideration to Mr. Cleworth, who has to be at his store by a certain time. I don't think Monday evening is a good time. And to go ahead and try to figure out which day, if we tried to do noon or something, would work for everybody, is just going to be a nightmare. So I would prefer to keep them in the morning. I think it's up to what Jerry thinks as far as changing it to 8. That would be okay with me.
Mr. Cleworth?
Thank you, Valerie, for worrying about me. I appreciate that. It is true.
You're welcome.
We open up our store early because the nature of the business is when you're working with the markets out there, the bullion markets, you've got to be open early because that's when they're open. This has been bandied about for decades. It was when we have these meetings, and I find them, I like them in the morning. I'll be honest with that. The 7 o'clock doesn't bother me at all. And if you go overtime, that's fine. I've got a business partner that can cover for me, but it is difficult. I just don't want to go during the day, period, and during the day I cannot do it. In the evenings, most of my nights are filled with other obligations, other committees and organizations I'm involved in. I don't want to give up another night of the week, but so this works for me. I'm biased. I like this. If we had to change it from 7 to 8, I could go that way. I would prefer that to meeting in the middle of the day sometime or in the evening. But I like it the way it is.
Mr. Ringside?
I was just going to say that, I guess I can be flexible too. I prefer not do it at 7 o'clock in the morning. Going to Monday, then you always know every Monday night you have a meeting, as opposed to this week it's Monday, next week it's Tuesday, and you're trying to schedule other things that happen on a regular basis. It might be more convenient to just say Mondays are council day. I don't know. I'm flexible, but I'd rather not do it at 7 a.m.
Ms. Sprinkle?
Curious point. So if we did it Monday night for council, next week Monday morning for our work meetings, is there a reason it's a Tuesday? I'm just curious about that.
No, let's not do an 8 a.m. Monday morning meeting.
Okay, fair
with
enough.
The council.
Okay, fair enough.
Please.
Yeah,
fair enough. Okay.
Cruising for a bruising. Ms. Therrien?
There's times when I still have to go to court, and court usually starts at 8:30. So I would prefer to stay with the 7. And Mondays, I think, are probably the busiest day for anybody that's working. And I could not see a early morning Monday meeting. So let's keep it the way it is.
Ms. Brickle?
I mean, for her, she likes 7, but I still think there are others that would like to talk about an 8 o'clock. So I don't mind a Monday. I don't mind a morning. Anyway.
Ms. Snyder, is this just a policy change, yeah? It's not really in code.
It's sort of the will of the body. It is not written in the code that these meetings have to be at 7 a.m. on Tuesday. So a change would just be a consensus.
Do we need to do anything formal?
No, the meetings will be, we could put an ad out that they will, that from now on the meeting time will be consistently whatever time you set. And then it'll be advertised from then on out as a new time.
So does consensus mean the majority, or does consensus mean everybody?
Majority.
Are we wanting to make that decision today? Seeing a no nod, seeing a yes nod, seeing a shrug.
We could put it.
All right, is there a consensus to move meetings from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. on Tuesday mornings? Is there a consensus with that? Who says yes? 1, 2, 3.
I'll vote yes.
Okay.
I'd like to think about it, but, you think about summer. Summer's a different world than the winter,
yep,
as far as getting up early and,
yep,
getting your day going. I don't know. I'd like to think about it.
So we have 4 in favor, 1 against, and 1 I want to think about it. Is that consensus? I think so. All right. We're going to move it to 8. We're going to do it. We're going to see how we like it. We can always move it back. So the clerk will make the required notifications for that. And the next work session will be on Tuesday, 2 weeks from now at 8 a.m. You probably still won't get a good night's sleep, but. All right, let's move on to the Finance Committee report. Ms. Bell.
Good morning again, everyone. We are the starter of the 7 a.m. meeting because these were Finance Committee meetings, and it worked for the public members of the Finance Committee to start at 7 because most of them had to work at 8. So our next finance committee meeting is Thursday, January 15th. Notice it is a week earlier. We had a committee member who could not attend at the fourth meeting. And we're going to meet at 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. We'll take a look at the preliminary December 31 statements. Of course, we will not be done with 2025 until the end of January. We're doing the final payments, and then we have a lot of work to do to prepare the audit. So they'll be looking at unaudited preliminary statements as of December 31. We're continuing our discussion on revenue generation. We're looking at parking services and sales tax, what areas we can do there. And then our next meeting after that is February the 26th. That's all I have.
Thanks, Ms. Sprinkle.
Margarita, where are we with the, did we work anything here at council about the lottery?
We have not at this time. It will come to the council probably in February, about the lottery. I'm doing a little bit of research on equipment cost, and once I have that information, then we'll bring it forth.
Anybody else on that? Okay, thanks, Ms. Bell. Mayor and council member comments, just a few comments from me. I just saw that Danny has sent out the policy, the remote work policy, so you should already have that in your email boxes when you're done with this meeting, so you can check that out. Want to really recognize the Public Works Department, the dispatch, and our police and fire departments for their extraordinary efforts over the last 2 weeks. We have been busy, that is for sure. And I know that you've seen our press releases going out on the suspension of trash. We did resume trash pickup yesterday. We had a community member who volunteered the Lathrop High School team to help us with that. So that was a nice partnership that was forged. The fire department has been busy with an unusually high amount of fires. There's a story in the paper about that today, and it is to be expected with temperatures that are so cold for such an extended amount of time. We have seen our response time and the ability to perform it, during those fires very well because they are well-staffed. And to that, I really want to thank the council for continuing to staff the fire department at a level where they can respond to our community in a successful way. We also had an unusual rescue. Somebody who had was spooked by a moose, or a moose was spooked by him, and fell on the train tracks and broke his leg. And there was a grand coordination of agencies that came together to rescue this individual who most undoubtedly would have died if we weren't able to respond. So I just want to give a hats off to our public works that's been sticking in there, our fire department that's been sticking in there, our dispatch that has just been excellent in coordinating with other agencies during this time. And just, you know, underline that the extreme cold weather, while it may be expected at times, it really does push this agency, this city, to the limits of what we can do. And because of the extraordinary staff that we have, we were able to meet that challenge. And I have all full confidence that we'll continue to do that. So I really wanted to underscore that activity because it's been quite a deal. Ms. Therrien. You're on mute, Ms. Therrien. Can you unmute her?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I just think before Margarita spends a lot of time dealing with this lottery, I'm totally against it. And I don't know whether or not there's enough support on the council for it. I know Ms. Tidwell's against it as well, and I just wanted to indicate that I don't think it's a good idea for the city. With regard to the resolution dealing with the policy, I really still think it's kind of targeted towards one person, and I feel very uncomfortable about it.
Mr. Cleway. Thank you. Council member comments?
Yeah, thank you. One of the ongoing issues over the years has been the bike path on the Chena River. And I talked to Crystal about this the other day. I'm going to request a work session, and it can be done before a council meeting or in addition to this one in the morning, with engineering department, and get a status update on that. Well, yeah.
Okay.
A portion.
Yeah.
Originally, that bike path was supposed to be on the north side of the river, to be parallel, essentially, to the south side. That thing has morphed, and that now all the attention is placed on and where the pedestrian walkway is down near Pioneer Park. When you cross that to the north side, where the path would go, and some people think it should go immediately to the west, which is follow the river or to the bridge. There's a problem with that in that the land that is there would require a tremendous amount of work to incorporate that bike path. The bill is, and Crystal, I get this wrong, it's about $6 million or something, made for how many feet? I mean, it's kind of, in my opinion, ridiculous. But there's options to that, and I think both our engineering department and DOT have come up with a very viable option. But I think you need to hear it from Bob himself and see what's going on there. If we have strong feelings about it, then we need to speak up, because whoever sponsors this is going to have to come up with a match. And whether that be the city or the borough or DOT or somebody, and I'm not seeing people running out to do that at this point, but I think you need to, you know, we need to be educated as to what's going on there and what the costs are and what the options are. Well, I'd appreciate that.
Ms. Tidwell, council member comments?
And just to add on to that, I'm in favor of that also. I think it is a very small project with a relatively high cost, you know, and if we do end up being the match for that, you know, potentially maybe we could have a bike path that is 4, 5, 6, 10 times the size that might suit our community better. But just to bring it to us and talk about it so that we can all see it, I think that's important. It has been a topic at Fast Planning, and it is one of the projects that they're looking at. So if we want to weigh in on that, we definitely should have that conversation.
Ms. Sprinkle, Councilmember.
And I was going to say that I think this dovetails with the Riverfront Commission component that John's going to now get caught up on. So I think it does involve a lot of, it's an onion, and I think it would be really helpful to have our guy, our engineer, come and talk to us, because it's been years in the making, and it seems a very strange project. I'm going to say thank you for Public Works for all the work you've done. Keep those roads safe. It's been crazy out there, and I think you guys are doing heroes work, and I'm glad you guys suspended service for that cold snap. It just was ridiculous. But I will say, a week or so and some ago, a friend and I came across a woman walking in the street without a jacket, without anything else, a T-shirt, at 42 below. And it was a scary thing, because we didn't know what to do with her. We put her in the car. We got her to a safe space, but we were in a situation where we had no place to take her otherwise. And I think that we as a city should look at some sort of absolute emergency scenario. So I just wanted to throw that out, just placing it gently, because that was a frightening, frightening thing to see. And she was not in a place to take care of herself. So I'm just glad we were there. We saved her life, literally. So thank you.
Mr. Marnie?
Well, I think it would behoove not only your department, your the admin side and the council side, to send a letter of thank you to John Thies and the Lathrop football team for stepping up to the plate.
Great idea.
Thank you.
Mr. Ringstead.
Your comments about the fire and the activity of that. Unfortunately, one of those fires was at somebody in my family's place outside the city limits, but there was like seven fire vehicles sitting in the driveway, so I don't know if our guys had a hand in that, but my guess is they may have. So for all the people that were out doing that stuff in very cold weather, thank you. You know, your work is appreciated.
That's always nice to hear. Thank you. Our next regular work session is Tuesday, January 20th at 8 a.m. And at 8:33, we're adjourned. Great meeting, everyone. Thanks.
Nice to see you, Ms. Therrien. Goodbye. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.